In 1997, there were 665 million pornographic videos rented or purchased in the United States of America. I would like to stand here and tell you that no member of the Lord's church has ever rented one, purchased one, or watched one, but that would not be true. There are more pornographic bookstores in the United States of America than there are McDonald's restaurants. And a lot of people are absolutely shocked when they first hear that. Some of you have heard it before, read it before. It's a fact. There are more outlets for pornography in the United States of America than there are McDonald's restaurants. And you know how many of them there are. There is a problem. 72,000 pornographic websites. I would like to stand here and tell you that no member of the Lord's church has ever visited such a website, but you know that would not be true. I mentioned to you last night that certainly individuals who wear the name Christian have visited the casinos, and certainly individuals who are members of the Lord's church have visited some of these bookstores, websites, etc., etc., etc. Now, it is interesting that some years ago, Penthouse Magazine made the outlandish claim that 35% of their readership was made up of, as they said, born-again Christians. They said, we have 1.67 million born-again Christians who are regular subscribers to our publication. Well, certainly their definition of a Christian and the Bible's definition of a Christian would be different. And I do not know where they got their statistics and how they know this to be true. I really don't believe that it's true, but I do believe this. We cannot go to the other extreme, stick our heads in the sand, and act like, hey, the Lord's church has no problem with this issue. I got a call some years ago from a woman in Oklahoma. I don't even remember her name. I don't even remember the precise place that she lived, but she called me. She'd received a magazine that I had written an article in, and she wanted to call me. Her husband was a preacher, and she broke down on the phone, and she said, Brother Clark, I've discovered that my husband is involved in internet pornography, and I do not know what to do about it. We talked for a long time on the phone, and I expressed to her my prayers and certainly told her that I would continue to pray for her. In my life as a gospel preacher, I've certainly faced this on more than one occasion. When I first moved to Etowah, Tennessee, there was a man who came to me, a young man in the congregation. He sat down across from me, and this was one of the first problem counseling type sessions I'd ever had. I was a young boy in my 20s, and I thought I was ready to take the world by the tail, and he dropped this bomb on me. He said, now, I'm married. I'm cheating on my wife, both in private by watching internet pornography, and it has also spilled over into an illicit relationship I'm having with a married woman. And he says, what should I do? We talked about his pornographic magazines. He had stacks and stacks and stacks of them. And he told me, he says, I know I need to get rid of them. He said, I think I'll sell them at a yard sale. I kid you not. I said, you need to do with those books what they did with the books in Acts chapter 19. You need to burn them and get rid of them. They don't need to fall in anyone else's hands. Now, this is a shocking statistic for you. About 70% of all pornographic magazines that are made will eventually fall into the hands of a minor. And you think, well, they can't go into the store and purchase them. That doesn't matter. There is an availability of these things beyond what you can imagine. I remember at one church where I preached many, 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 many years ago, I was kept in a family's home for the summer while I was working with that congregation. And one particular morning, I was in the restroom looking for some materials that I needed to get ready and clean up. And I didn't see them, and so I thought, well, maybe they're here under the sink. And when I opened the sink, the cabinet to the sink, the door under the sink, there were magazines stacked this high that were pornographic in nature. And this was in the home of a member of the church there that was well respected and kept me in his home, and I appreciated his generosity. 91% of all junior high school males and 82% of junior high school females in a recent survey admitted having been exposed to hardcore pornography at least once. Now you ask yourself, how is this possible? They're everywhere. You just have to sometimes know where to find them. And I tell you what's happening, parents. You and I need to be aware of this. Sometimes your sweet child will be invited over for a sleepover at someone's house. And the someone who's invited them over might be someone that you don't think is any danger. I mean, it's just a child. But what about that child's parents? What if that child's father is into pornography and has those magazines just laying out where they can be seen? These are things that have to be asked. And if your children are going to go over for a sleepover at someone's house, don't just accept the idea, well, we're going to watch movies all night and then we're going to just fall asleep. What movies are going to be watched? Because when we talk about pornography, it's easy to just think of Penthouse, Playboy, Hustler, Gallery, and on we could go listing some of the pornographic magazines that are available. But look, pornography is far-reaching. It is not just hardcore videos. It can be in television shows such as MTV and VH1. And I'll tell you, one of the most hedonistic and pornographic channels on television is E! Entertainment, Hollywood Entertainment. All you have to do for just a few minutes, if you're grazing or flat, I've recently made the decision in my own home to block out every channel that is available, and my children now have to come to me and ask to watch a specific program, and then I'll turn it on for them. They don't know the passcode. I did this because there are programs on television. We don't have HBO in my house. We don't have Skinamax or Cinemax, as some people would call it. We don't have Showtime. We don't have any of the movie channels that would show all of these kinds of videos. But I'll tell you this. We have UPN, and they have a program on there called Blind Date. How many of you have ever heard of this program? You ever hear it? I've never heard of that program. They have programs on there called Eliminate. They have programs on there called The Fifth Wheel. And even though there's no nudity shown in its absolute, you know, bareness, there is sexual innuendo like you cannot believe. There are suggestive things. There are times when they'll show individuals getting into the hot tub and unclothing themselves, but they'll cover it up with various, you know, little dots or squares that keep you from seeing everything that you want to see or that people are looking for. And these are the kinds of things that people are. Look, does your child have a television in their room? And if so, is it hooked up to cable? And if so, are you aware of what your child may or may not be watching? You say, well, my child has a television in their room, but it's not hooked up to cable. Look, you still got a problem if it's hooked up to local channels, because the channels I just described to you are channel 30, and it can be picked up on any television in the Memphis area that has any kind of antenna at all. And I found this out the hard way. We had a television in my boy's room, and I was walking by one day, and the television had just been left on. They weren't in the room, but they'd left the television on. And this program was on one late afternoon, and I thought to myself, you've got to be kidding me. This is impossible. But it wasn't impossible for that to be on local television. Do not deceive yourself into thinking that as long as I don't have any of the cable channels, my children are safe. And furthermore, we had a situation not long ago where I talked to a father whose son had the internet available to him right there in his bedroom. And of course, it was only for the purpose of him doing his schoolwork and being able to get online and research for reports and things of that nature. And I don't have a doubt in the world that that is the reason the computer was placed in there, that that's the reason the internet was made available to him. I don't doubt the motives of the parents or the child. But the plain truth of the matter is, if your child has access to the internet, even if they're not looking for things, they are going to stumble across things, and it is going to be Temptation City. Please believe me. I'm telling you the truth. Look, some of these pornographers are so insidious that they know that children will get online, and they'll go look. Let's say they're going to do a report on the White House. Oh, if they do a report on the White House, they type White House into the search engine, they hit enter, and that's going to be innocuous, right? No one in their right mind could possibly engineer a plan whereby the White House could be used as a pornography site. Listen, there is such a location. I know one of our elders some years ago was planning a trip to Pike's Peak. And he typed that into the search engine, and you can imagine the kinds of things that came up after that. It was sick and twisted, and he wasn't even looking for it and stumbled across it. Now a lot of these banners are very provocative in their nature. Even non-pornographic sites will have places or links that if you were to click, it would take you to a place you never even wanted to go. And you've got to be aware of this. If your child has access to the internet, then you need to work hard to make sure there are filters installed to the best of your ability. But really, that's not even enough, because clever children have been able to find, even as children, ways around some of the tools that are used to try to keep people from watching pornography. You need to really keep the computer in a very public, out in the open place, and just have the child, if he wants to get on and search for his homework, great, wonderful. But he does it with parental supervision, parents in the house, parents right in the neighborhood of where he's going to be looking. This is not oppressive, it is protective of your child. If you love your child, you're going to go out of your way to keep them out of the way of things that would poison their minds. Because let me tell you something, there are books that have proven this, and it is a biological fact that when men, especially young males, are exposed to pornographic pictures, the epinephrine, the chemicals that begin to work in the brain, there are highs that come about as a result of this, and the body begins to look for those things, and pretty soon, before you know it, young males are thinking more and more and more and more about young girls only as sex objects. And if you don't think that is a reality in our nation, then I just advise you to get online and go look up the movie American Pie on ScreenIt.com. Look up American Pie 2 on ScreenIt.com. Look up American Wedding on ScreenIt.com. These are three of the most popular, successful teenage movies. And you say, well, my child has never seen that movie. I would never let my child go to an R-rated movie at the theater. I'd never allow that. Do you know whether your child has watched it on a video at some friend's house? And I'm not standing up here accusing young people of going out and looking for it, but I was young once too, and I know how powerful peer pressure can be. And if you're at someone's house and they say, let's watch this movie, and everybody else wants to and you don't, you have to have some special courage to stand up. And some people won't do it because they're scared. They don't want to be accepted by their friends. And so here they are exposed to this. They see this, and it's in their mind, and it's been documented that pornographic images in the mind stay in the mind. Even when you get away from pornography, those images can be emblazoned upon your mind, and 20 years later, the image that you saw is still there if you want to find it and retrieve it from the database. It's powerful. It's very, very powerful. And young people are exposed to it on every hand. Now, I found this as I was doing some research. This is Pleasure Secrets. It came up. And what I typed into the search field on my research for this lesson, I wanted to be very careful about, because if I just typed in pornography, then I was going to get all kinds of things I didn't want to get. So I thought I would type in the Bible and pornography, the Christian and pornography. And even typing that into the search field, here's something that came up. Pleasure Secrets. Soft porn, a celebration of a God-given gift? Have conservative Christians typically got it wrong? A thought-provoking reevaluation of an often misunderstood subject. And the man named Grantley Morris portrays himself as a conservative Christian. He says that he has, quote, stripped himself of self-righteousness blind traditionalism, legalism, and pressure to conform. He is a conservative Bible believer risking controversy as he seeks a fresh look at God's attitude toward erotica. And this is what he says. Sex, pleasure, beauty, the human body, they were all created by the God of the Bible, who pronounced everything He made to be very good. We came into this world naked, He said. Adam and Eve, in the perfection of their purity, frolicked that way in Eden. What Bible believer, focusing solely on the facts, could object to erotic pics and videos of lovemaking? Isn't it the innocent enjoyment of a God-given gift? He said. Now, I shudder to think that there are people who would actually believe that in this country, but it is the case. Now, I want you to see that the Bible does talk about some things relative to this subject, and really it all has to do oftentimes, especially with the male, with what starts right here. The eyes. And women know this. The pornographers know this. And Brother Young is here this morning, and he wrote an article some years ago about Abercrombie and Fitch and pornography, and he documented it, and your children may even wear clothing from Abercrombie and Fitch. I don't know. And I recognize that if they do, it's not because they were trying to support consciously some effort of pornographers. A lot of children just see it at the mall, they buy it, and parents buy it for them and don't even know the real background behind this organization or this company. Came out with a catalog in which young children were seen in their catalog in very suggestive poses, wearing very little clothing, selling. And this is a difficult sermon to preach in some ways, because I want to be tasteful. I want to be discreet. But brethren, I want to be bold enough to let you know what's really going on, because sometimes until you know what's really going on, you don't get mad enough to do something about it. Selling thong underwear for 7, 8, 9-year-old girls with the following words written across the front of these underwear: eye candy. Eye candy. What's eye candy? Oh, that's what you get when you look at someone to lust after them. That's like a little sweet treat. You tell me what business a young girl, what mother in her right mind would purchase such a garment for their child? Well, you say, I've never seen anything like that at the mall. And no, you won't at the mall, but please understand, at least I've not seen it at the mall. Of course, I haven't been looking for that particular item. But I want you to know that the idea of just looking is really dangerous. Somebody says, and a man said this some years ago to me, and I was absolutely horrified at the concept of it and the implications of it. He said, as I talked to him about his situation with his wife and the problems with pornography he was having, he said in my office, he said, well, just because you're on a diet doesn't mean you can't look at the menu. That's what he said. As far as he was concerned, he wasn't really hurting anyone by looking at this pornography. He was not actually engaging in adultery overtly with any woman. He was just looking, and as long as you're just looking, that's all right. Well, would you notice with me the emphasis in the Bible on looking and what it leads to? And this is one reason why men have to, the moment they begin to think about lusting, they need to stop immediately. One book that I've read on the subject talks about eye bouncing, and immediately reverting one's eyes to something else. Because I'm a man just like every other male here. And let's face it, males are more visually stimulated than women are. And a lot of women don't understand this, which is one reason why they don't understand something else that's going to be preached about during this series, why it's so important to be dressed modestly. Because they don't have the same general reaction to lust physically as much as men do. They don't think about it being that important to be clothed. When I was growing up, we brought a foster boy into our home for foster care. And one summer day, when I was about, 13 or 14 years old, this young man took off on his bicycle and went riding down the street. And then in a little while, he came back and he said, "Switch bikes with me." And so I did. I switched bikes with him and I got on this bicycle and I'm riding along. And all of a sudden, I noticed a police cruiser behind me. And the police cruiser follows me until I stop. And they call me over and they say, "Young man, you've been riding this bike?" And I said, "Well, just for a couple of minutes." "Who's riding this bike?" "A while ago." I said, "Well, my foster brother." "Where's he at?" I said, "Well, follow me and I'll take you to him." And we got there, and then another police cruiser pulled up, and a woman got out of that vehicle, the second police car, and she had a tube top on that was barely covering any of her chest. She had short shorts on that were exposing her backside for all the world to see. She was immodestly appareled as anyone I've ever seen. And as a young boy, I still remember being shocked at how naked she was out in public. Well, I do not endorse in any way, shape, or form what this young boy did. I'm not saying that at all. He saw her in the Joe O'Malley parking lot. And when she wasn't looking, he went up and pulled her top down. They took him off in handcuffs for doing that. And he did deserve to be punished severely, no doubt about it. I want to ask you a question, though. Does she have any responsibility to dress modestly in public? That doesn't justify what he did. Doesn't even come close to justifying what he did. But when she dressed that way, she was dressed with the attire of a harlot, if you want to use the language of Scripture. And so women should not be shocked if they dress immodestly that men would begin to have to battle their eyes and what their eyes want to do. In Genesis chapter 34, I want you to notice the statement in verse 2. This is talking about Dinah. When Shechem, the son of Hamor the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her. Notice, first he saw her, then he took her and lay with her and defiled her. He saw her. Now, is that an isolated instance? Go with me to 2 Samuel chapter 11 and notice that as you're reading about David in this passage of Scripture, you're all familiar with it. The Bible says, verse 2, "It came to pass in an evening tide, David arose from off his bed, walked upon the roof of the king's house, and from the roof he saw a woman washing herself, and the woman was very beautiful to look upon." And if David had immediately had the self-control to do what Job 31:1 says, "I've made a covenant with mine eyes, why then should I look upon a maid or a young woman to lust after her?" is the implication. Job's friends were saying, "Job, the reason you're suffering, you sinned. You've done things that God's going to get you for. In fact, he's already getting you for it right now. You probably lusted after women." Job said, "Look, I've made a covenant with mine eyes. Why should I do that?" If David had accidentally happened upon her, and I don't know whether he knew this was her bath time, whether he just happened upon her, the Scripture doesn't come right out and say. I'd like to believe that he just happened upon her and that he didn't premeditate and plan going up there looking for her, hoping that he'd see her. Nevertheless, when he saw her, if he had just turned away and walked downstairs, he wouldn't have sinned. It would have been an accident. But he saw her, and what he saw, what started right here and went into the mind, began to produce the thoughts that he had that led to his committing fornication with her. In fact, in the book of Mark chapter 7, the Bible makes this plain. If you want to overcome pornography, if you want to overcome lust, any sin you want to deal with, you've got to start right here. You've got to renew the mind. You've got to transform the mind. Why? Because that's where things come. Look at verse 21 of Mark 7. "For from within, out of the heart of men proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts," on and on we could go. It all starts right here. You are what you eat, you've heard. You are also what you think about. And I am too. Those things get into the mind and it's just like a computer, garbage in, garbage out. What the mind feeds upon is what the mind is going to end up accomplishing either mentally or overtly. And that's why we need to follow the advice of Proverbs 4 and guard the heart with all diligence. Because once we let it in, once pornography or lustful thoughts begin to come into our minds, it's like kudzu. It spreads and it is very, very difficult to eradicate once you've allowed it to grow. It gets big. Now, in David's case, he saw her and then he did what else he did. I want you to go back with me to Genesis 38. Back in Genesis 38, look at verse 2 of this chapter. Genesis 38 and verse 2. Judah saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite whose name was Shua. He took her and went into her. Chapter 34, we noticed that there is Dinah. Shechem saw her, then took her. In Genesis 38, Judah saw her, then took her. If you will stay in the chapter, go down to verses 15 and 16 of Genesis 38. When Judah saw her, he thought her to be a harlot because she'd covered her face. He turned unto her by the way and said, "Go to, I pray thee, let me come in unto thee." And his sins surely found him out, and we all know about that. Now go to Judges 16. Judges chapter 16, we're talking about Samson. In Judges chapter 16 and verse 1, what's the Bible say in this passage of Scripture? Then went Samson to Gaza and saw there a harlot and went in unto her. He saw her first, then he went in unto her. It started with the eyes. You'll notice in Judges 14, back a couple of chapters, verses 2 and 3. He came up, he told his father and his mother and said, "I have seen a woman in Timnath of the daughters of the Philistines. Now therefore, get her for me to wife." He saw her and was attracted to her and wanted her to be his wife. And there is such a thing as seeing someone's beauty and having it be dignified, as we appreciate the beauty without undressing them with our eyes. We can see someone's beauty and appreciate it, but there are times when we go too far and you know what's interesting? You look at all these instances that I've just shown you, and they're but a sampling of men seeing a woman and being attracted to that woman visually. Go to Genesis 39. This is the only situation I know of in the Bible that overtly talks about a woman seeing a man and being so attracted to him and his physical appearance that she desired to be with him. The Bible in verse 7 of Genesis 39 says that it came to pass after these things that his master's wife, this would be Potiphar's wife, notice, cast her eyes upon Joseph. It started with the eyes. And so we've got to put a bridle on our tongue and keep from saying wicked things. That's true. We've also got to put blinders sometimes on our eyes so that we don't dwell upon, look upon, and feast upon things that are going to lead us to do other things. The Bible makes it clear that what we see affects who we are. And the movie makers know this. Listen, this is the director of the movie Police Academy, which is an old movie as far as the time it came out. But here's Hugh Wilson, the director of this movie. And here's what he said in a newspaper interview about the secret of success with gutter-level films aimed at teenagers. Here's what he said. He said, "I lure teens to the box office with four principles. Number one, the kids must get even with or destroy an authority figure. There has to be rebellion against authority." That's one thing. Number two, there must be one outstandingly dirty comic sequence. Number three, no window shades in the women's shower room. Number four, the director must do his homework, boning up on Animal House, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, Porky's, or other such dirty movies of the same variety, and what worked for them, we need to put in my film so that it will work and draw people to the box office. That's what he said. Now, Brother Dove's going to speak on humanism later this afternoon. I'm not speaking on his topic, but I do want to notice what a humanist said about the Bible. Saul Gordon, the director of the Institute for Family Research and Education, if you can believe that's what he's the director of, when you hear what he has to say, you're going to think he's the director of what? Yeah, he's the director of family research and education. He doesn't believe in family as God would describe it. He said this in a quote, "The Bible is one of the most pornographic things we have available to us today. The Bible is one of the most masochistic, pornographic things we have in terms of humiliation of women. Women are supposed to be quiet in the Bible. If I was to talk about the real threat to women, I would talk about some of the influences of the Bible. Those are some of the much more serious threats than pornography." And he said, if we could ban pornography tomorrow, in 5 years' time, I predict there'll be more rape, more sadomasochism, more child molestation than we have now. And then another panelist at this conference that was being conducted, Gina Allen, the former director and vice president of the American Humanist Association, this is what she said as she started her speech. She said, "I brought my Bible. I always steal a Bible out of a hotel. It makes the Gideons very happy. You know, they look and they have to replace a Bible and they say, 'We've got another convert.' Actually, I take them out of hotels because I wouldn't want a child to get hold of this pornographic book. Pornography is a symptom of a sick society, a society based on this book." And she said the stories in the Bible were the forerunners of the famous Hustler magazine cover that shows a woman being put through a meat grinder. And she says the Christian wife is one who is really just so out of touch with what a true woman really is. And I can't even quote in this mixed crowd with the children present what she said about women and how they're to be used in the home by the male. And she says that she has a very special feminist dream, and that is that someday every girl who's ever been molested, every woman who's ever been raped, will someday be able to sue the Gideons who distributed the pornographic material that caused it. That's what she said. That would be her dream. And you know, you would think that people would have more sense than to write what the editor of the daily paper in Waycross, Georgia wrote. In his editorial, he said, "The Journal Herald doesn't want to be painted as a defender of pornography. Ours is a family newspaper which supports the Judeo-Christian ethic. But in all honesty, we don't view the sale of a nationally distributed magazine to an adult or an adult viewing of a cable television program in a motel room as a threat to the moral integrity of this community. What's the big deal? It's not harming anyone. We view racism, abject poverty, joblessness, illiteracy, drug and alcohol abuse, gambling and drunken driving, among others, as social problems which do have a devastating effect upon society in this community. But look, someone buying a magazine or watching a movie in a hotel, big deal. Who's that going to hurt?" Well, let's answer that question. In Cleveland, Ohio, a counselor for a preschool program has been charged with 3 felonies for allegedly taking a 10-year-old girl to his apartment, showing her sexually explicit videotapes, and molesting her. Now, if pornography is such a victimless crime, please explain that to this precious 10-year-old girl who's going to have to deal with this for the rest of her life. You say, well, that's an isolated instance. That's not really going on all over the place. A 23-year-old Santa Paula, California man was recently sentenced to 24 years in state prison for molesting 9 young boys. He pleaded guilty to 11 felony and misdemeanor counts. A search of Marua's house revealed a wealth of pornographic videotapes and pictures. Albuquerque Tribune, 22-year-old University of New Mexico co-ed Linda Daniels, drugged, raped, and killed after being kidnapped by 3 men prowling the Albuquerque streets. Why? They wanted a woman to use in a pornographic movie they were making. And so they picked her. And the next morning, they took her out beneath a bridge and told her to lie down. And she begged for her life before they shot her in the head. And it all started with their pornography. You say, well, that's far away. That's Albuquerque, Oklahoma City. 40-year-old Oklahoma City man jailed on child pornography complaints after police said they searched his home and found more than 900 photographs of nude children and numerous other items of child pornography. When they searched his apartment, they found 77 issues of the National Association of Man-Boy Lovers of America bulletins and one of the association's journals. 66 manila envelopes had 891 pornographic photographs in them. And there were three small manila envelopes with 26 photographs, and on and on and on I could go. Now listen, even those who posed for some of these magazines later on admit the harm it caused them. A girl who would only identify herself as Julie posed for Playboy in her years prior, and she said this, "I regret more than anything what I did in posing for Playboy," she said. "If I had only known the harassment that would come with the photographs." She said she got degrading remarks over the phone. People would mail her suggestive things in the mail. She went through Cornell University, and the rest of the time she was at Cornell, all of the boys were constantly hawking after her and saying suggestive things behind her and talking to her very suggestively, trying to get her to take her clothes off of them. And she said, "Upon further reflection, I don't really feel good about myself and what I did." Hugh Hefner is one of the most vile men on the face of the planet, and yet you don't see the media portraying him that way, do you? He is the icon of what every man wants to be if the media has their way. That's the American dream. Grow up, be a multimillionaire, live in a mansion, and have scantily clad women or women without clothing always walking around you, and you're going to be as happy as you can possibly be. Hugh Hefner, in a recent Los Angeles Times article, unhesitatingly approved of bestiality. Now, what are you and I supposed to do about this? Well, let me tell you what CBS said we should do about it. And this is a dated statement, but it's not anything that's atypical from the kind of stuff you'll see nowadays. How many of you remember the sitcom Kate and Allie? You remember this program, Kate and Allie? In this particular episode, Kate and Allie are walking by a sidewalk newsstand, and there are pornographic magazines apparent for all to see. And Allie says, "Oh, it's disgusting. You can't even buy a newspaper around here without being assaulted by all those smutty magazines." Kate says, "Well, don't look." Allie says, "Well, how can you help but look? They're all over the place." Kate says, "Well, that's the price you pay for living in a free country." "That's not freedom, that's moral anarchy," Allie responds. And Kate says, "You want censorship?" "No, I don't want censorship." "Well, then you have to learn to live with a little smut." You know, that's just the price you have to pay. You know, these people who say, "Who are you to tell me what I can watch in the privacy of my own home?" You know, it would be one thing if it remained in the privacy of their own home. That would be one thing. It would still be sinful, but it might not affect you and me. But I'm going to tell you something. I have a daughter. She's 14 years old, and I think she's beautiful. And I don't want some guy watching pornographic videos in his house, then leaving his house all charged up, and then seeing my daughter walk down the street and suddenly think, "Aha. There's real life flesh. I want that." And you better believe it does get into my backyard when my daughter's safety is threatened. And the